And we're back. This is another week. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Last week we were joined by a good friend of mine, Raul Reyes, who works with, he's Executive Vice President of a clinic there in Arizona, in Phoenix, Arizona. Today we're joined by another guest over the phone. His name is John Sego, and John is the Legislative Director of the Texas Right to Life, and I wanted to reach out to him to talk about some legislation that's going on in Texas, the possibility of the Supreme Court taking up, you know, some of that legislation, and also some other things that Texas is doing that some other states may be looking to do in the near future. And the reason that I wanted to start with you, John, is because Texas tends to set the stage in terms of conservative legislation, in terms of pro-life legislation. And I wanted to hear what's going on the ground there with Texas Right to Life and other pro-life organizations and how y'all are really, you know, setting the stage for some amazing stuff happening in this country for life. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So let's start by, I guess, my first thing is just to kind of talk to you about what got you involved in the movement. So what got you involved in pro-life initiatives? What got you involved with the Texas Right to Life? And then just kind of tell a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the topics that we have in front of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am definitely consider myself blessed to be able to work in the pro-life movement. I have a lot of friends who are pro-life and very convicted, but they have to find, you know, time in addition to their work to do pro-life activism and go and take a stand for life. And so definitely appreciative that it's actually my job, so it's not wasted on me, and I do get to work to stand up for the preborn, the pregnant women, and vulnerable patients here in Texas as part of my job. So I'm the Legislative Director for Texas Right to Life, so I oversee all of our brainstorming, our researching, and writing of pro-life legislation, and then whenever we're in our legislative session every other year, I lead our lobby team in the Capitol here in Austin to actually go into the Capitol and find people to carry our legislation, to help them get it passed and lobby for life-saving legislation. So definitely a privilege to be able to work in the pro-life movement, and there's a lot of sides to it, you know, with like our pregnancy centers. That's another side of the pro-life movement, and we find ourselves here on the front of the political fight. And I kind of got involved in that just by being interested in politics, being interested in kind of what's going on with pro-life legislation, and volunteered for Texas Right to Life several years ago, right before I went to college. Just told them I'll do whatever they, you know, they need. And I was a bit of a bookworm at the time, so I was willing to go through pages and pages of state law, comparing what Texas had to other states and looking for pro-life opportunities to protect life that Texas hadn't done yet. And after, you know, a couple of days of being able to read through apparently projects that others didn't want to do, I was offered a job. So I've kind of been with Texas Right to Life for several years now, more than 10 years, just kind of on and off in different capacities. And now I serve full-time as our legislative director, leading up our legislative efforts here in Austin.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note the different arms, I guess, of the pro-life movement. So when I started at Hope Resource Center, one thing that I told our staff is what we're going to do is we're going to lock arms with those that are pro-life. So I don't believe that the life issue is a political issue in and of itself. I believe that it's a gospel issue, a biblical issue. But we are in a society, we're in a culture where politics play a role, and I'm a political junkie. I love this stuff. So, you know, what I told them is we need to understand what's going on in the legislature. If that's going to affect pregnancy centers, if that's going to close the doors of abortion clinics, which ultimately we would love to see, and we also just need to know what legislators are standing for life and kind of where they stand on those issues. So I love the Right to Life folks in all the states. I'm hoping to have someone from the Oregon Right to Life in the next few weeks to talk with us. So, and of course we partner with the folks here in Tennessee because we need that legislative arm. We need y'all to focus there so that we can do what we do in the pregnancy center world better, and so that we can serve those patients well. So the next thing that I want to get to in this first segment is to talk about House Bill 2. And I know that was signed, I believe, under Governor Perry, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so just go into what that legislation did, kind of where y'all are at now, because I know there's been some folks in Texas that are trying to oppose that. So where are y'all at currently with House Bill 2?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2013, we had our legislative session. We meet every other year. So 2013, we had our session, and we had an extremely difficult legislative session. And a lot of people think just because we're Texas, we can pass, you know, whatever conservative legislation we want. That's definitely not the case. We have a very powerful and loud opposition party, and we even got some kind of bad faith Republicans that kind of try to stop some of our pro-life legislation at times. And so it's still a struggle. So just kind of encouragement to other states that think we have it better off in Texas. You know, if you're saving lives, if you're doing something, you know, as important as pro-life work, it's going to be difficult no matter where you are.
Sure.
So 2013, we had a really difficult regular session. We tried to push some pro-life reform in several different areas, and were unable to pass them. And so we kind of ended our legislative session pretty discouraged by what we saw, by some apathy from some Republican leaders in the House, and some cowardice up to, you know, these elected officials not being willing to stand up to some medical lobbyists who did not like pro-life legislation at the time. And so we were a little bit discouraged kind of leaving our legislative session. Well, at the time we had our pro-life governor, Rick Perry, and when he saw the legislature was willing to walk away for another 2 years without a single pro-life bill, he was not content with that. And thankfully, he called them back. He already had a special session going on in another topic, and so he added pro-life legislation to the call for the special session and said, you've got 30 days to pass pro-life legislation. Get back there and do your job. So thankfully, we worked with his office. We worked with the Lieutenant Governor, David Dewhurst, at the time, his office, to put together House Bill 2. And House Bill 2 was four separate pro-life policies, and it was kind of bound into one big bill, pro-life omnibus bill, as it was called, that would affect several different pro-life policies. So first, it would kind of clean up the abortion industry, some abuses, some dangerous areas that we saw in the abortion industry, like with admitting privileges for the abortionists. We saw that we had in Texas some abortionists who were not trained and not qualified to be doing elective abortions in Texas, and it was a health concern for the women that they were going in and doing this elective procedure, and women who were having complications or needed immediate care afterwards were, you know, ending up in the emergency room. They were ending up in the hospitals around that abortion clinic. So we said those abortionists need to be held accountable to the hospital community, the medical community that they're performing abortions in. So that abortionist has to get admitting privileges, meaning recognized, kind of standard recognized privileges and access to a hospital in the community that he's performing abortions in. So that raised the standards on abortionists. The second one was raising the standard on the abortion clinic itself, actually saying that the abortion clinic where the abortion is performed has to follow a certain set of rules. And we didn't create a new set of rules. We were already enforcing these set of rules for other types of clinics, like day surgery centers. If you would go to get kind of laser eye surgery or something like that, you would have to go to a clinic that follows all of these rules about how big the hallways are, that it has a separate locker room for the staff, that there's emergency policies if there was a fire. There's backup generator if any of the equipment was run by, required power. So there's a lot of kind of set of rules, and we said abortion clinics have to follow that set of rules, and it's called the Ambulatory Surgical Center rule standards. And so we said abortionists have to cover that one. And then the third one is about chemical abortion, not surgical abortions, but chemical abortions, when a woman is taking these abortion-inducing drugs, we said that these abortionists need to follow the FDA guidelines on that. We saw in Texas there were a lot of abortionists who were changing how they were using those dangerous drugs, those life-ending drugs, and putting women and their children at further risk because of the way that they were bending the rules. And so we said you have to follow FDA rules. And then the last one had to do with the preborn child itself. So all the first three were about the abortion industry, keeping them up to standard medical standards. And this last one was about the preborn child itself. It was actually saying that an abortion cannot be performed on a preborn child from 20 weeks on. And so at 20 weeks, we have this body of medical evidence that went that these preborn children feel pain, that they have all the pain experiences that we do. And so kind of as a state, we were expanding kind of the class of citizens that we want to protect with our laws to those preborn children who can feel pain. So the long answer, but there were four kind of parts to that House Bill 2 law that we passed in the summer of 2013.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that the goal there not only is to protect the unborn, but it's also to set the standards that we would want set for our mom, that we would want set for our daughters, that we would want set for our spouses, so that these organizations, these abortion clinics, are not cutting corners. They're not ending up like Gosnell in Philadelphia and operating in terrible, terrible conditions, because at no point did the state step in to require them to do certain things. So the goal here, you know, that's the interesting thing, and we're going to talk about this more here in a little bit. The interesting thing about those that argue that the pro-life people are against women, all we're doing is trying to make places a little bit better and safer for women when they go to those places. And our pro-life stance forces us to be pro-woman. And so we stand for the woman. I stand for women, and I don't think it's a stretch to require them to meet certain standards that other organizations, other clinics are having to meet. I mean, at Hope Resource Center here in Knoxville, not at the government pushing, but because we love women, we become accredited. We are meeting all the standards, going way above and beyond anything the state would require of us, or the federal government for that matter, because we want to give the best care and service to our people. That means that we're not having, you know, non-medical people giving ultrasounds or performing medical procedures. We have our nurses and nurse practitioners. We have a medical board that kind of oversees us. We have a doctor that works with us. So, you know, we're working closely to do that because we care deeply about not just life, but all life. When we come back, we're about to take a break, John. When we come back, I want to talk about the work that y'all are doing in defunding Planned Parenthood in a number of different areas. And, of course, the videos that have came out recently that we definitely want to talk about and kind of how that shed light on Planned Parenthood and what's going on in those organizations. So when we come back, we'll have more with John Segoe, Legislative Director, Texas Right to Life. There's a lot about me that's never been told. We're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center, joined today by John Segoe, Legislative Director of Texas Right to Life. John, thanks for joining me again. We are certainly glad that you have. Now I want to shift focus to what y'all are doing in Texas concerning Planned Parenthood. So a lot of states are working to defund Planned Parenthood with state dollars, and now Texas is trying to also end the contract, so the Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood clinics. Talk a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. And eventually, let's get back to the House Bill 2.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a few lawsuits that are going to end up in the Supreme Court, so don't want to miss on that. But on the defunding issue, yeah, this has been a huge topic for us for actually the last 6 years. Texas Right to Life has been working on defunding for several sessions now. We see, you know, we came across this information that Planned Parenthood was receiving taxpayer dollars in Texas. And we started researching this a long time ago and kind of digging into it. And it ended up being a lot more complicated and a lot more difficult than we, you know, anticipated at the beginning. So we found them in one big program. They were getting tens of millions of dollars a year from the Texas government, and to do some services like family planning, preventative care services, and some family planning counseling. So we started looking at, well, how can we cut this off? And so starting in around 2011, we passed some legislation to send this money to better providers that are doing more comprehensive care, that don't have a bias, and that are not affiliated with the abortion industry. And then once we kind of cut off a few of the funding streams there, we found they were in even more places in our government, that they were receiving funding from several other funding streams. And so it's been a long road in Texas to slowly cut off one funding stream at a time. And it's very difficult, and I know a lot of states, we've counseled and advised a lot of other states in their effort. And a lot of states are finding that the abortion industry has, you know, its hands in a lot of the pockets all over their budget, kind of popping up in unexpected places. And so we're kind of helping several other states, and we're finishing it here in Texas, to stop Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers from benefiting from taxpayer dollars. And at the end of the day, and, you know, we get a lot of arguments about this, because Planned Parenthood in Texas, they advertise themselves as a healthcare organization, an organization that is providing essential services for the state and getting reimbursed for it. And our position at Texas Right to Life, and Andrew, I believe this will be your position as well, but our view was that even if Planned Parenthood came to the legislature and agreed to pave roads for government funding, we would oppose that. Because at the end of the day, we would be using taxpayer dollars to benefit Planned Parenthood. Even if they're just getting reimbursed for services that they provide in the state, we're giving them a stake in our community. We're giving them free advertisement. We're using taxpayer dollars for them to have a presence in our Texas communities, and that we know that they have a conflict of interest here. For these services to build up a relationship that then with Texas women, that then their business model revolves around them turning around and selling elective abortions to Texas women for a profit.
Right.
At the end of that.
Right.
And so we go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say the analogy that I like to use is it's the same thing if you got a drug dealer in your community. And that drug dealer does so much amazing stuff for the community. At Thanksgiving, they give out turkeys. They're working with Angel Tree, they're doing all these things, but ultimately we know that after all that's done, they are still selling drugs to this community. And so, or you can fill that in with a mob boss who did a lot of great things for communities, but you wouldn't have been okay with the state or with the city saying, yeah, let's give them, you know, a whole lot of money because they're doing a little bit of good work, but along with that good work, they're also, in this case, taking lives. And so if, you know, your money shows where your support is. So if states with state tax dollars and the federal government with federal tax dollars are giving money to those organizations, what they're ultimately saying is, I'm okay with everything you do, not just, you know, certain things. But you're saying overall, I'm okay with what you're doing.
Absolutely. And so there's kind of the principle of argument like that, is that we're endorsing a behavior, we're endorsing a company that at its core is bent on selling abortions. But also kind of in the legislature, and even with Republicans in our Texas legislature, I also have to show them kind of the argument from utility, the utilitarian argument, that not just is it bad principles, it also doesn't make good public policy. Because in Texas, Planned Parenthood is actually not needed. You know, some Republicans think, well, we need to kind of have some kind of partnership with them because they, you know, if they don't provide these services, no one else will. And that's not accurate. We've found and we've demonstrated towards our legislature that we don't need Planned Parenthood, that we can cover these health services without them. So, for example, in the city I live in Austin, we have 66 of these providers that can do exactly what Planned Parenthood is doing, and there are three clinics in our city. We have 66 clinics that can do those services and more. And these 66 clinics are not as controversial. They don't have these undercover videos coming out about them. They don't have this whole culture war around them. And actually, these 66 are less expensive. And that's one thing that we've showed our legislature, that even if you don't want to stand on principle, stand on saving money, that we have evidence and we've seen Planned Parenthood cost taxpayer dollars more money per provider than these other clinics. Actually, Planned Parenthood is 43% more expensive per client for the government. So we have to make both arguments for us to be compelling in the state capitol. But at the end of the day, the conclusion is the same, that Texas and any state should not be using taxpayer dollars to support Planned Parenthood or the abortion industry.
Yeah, and that's what we, you know, at Hope Resource Center, we ran some numbers yesterday, and it's somewhere around over the last year, we've provided a little over $150,000 in ultrasound services. So that's just ultrasounds. And we do that at no charge to a patient. We're not billing their insurance. We're not seeking reimbursement from the state. Now, the question that we give is, well, where would those folks have gone had it not been for Hope? So they probably would have gotten some tax dollars put their way. So it is not only standing for life, but it's also saving taxpayer dollars, and that's ultimately our goal too. So and I'm sure that Planned Parenthood is also very much opposed to House Bill 2 that we were just talking about, which brings in the Supreme Court maybe taking up that case. So go into that a little bit. We got just a couple more minutes, and then we'll hit it with the next segment as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So with Planned Parenthood, they're not just a healthcare provider in Texas. They're actually a political lobby. They have a political lobby, and they opposed the House Bill 2 legislation, what was going through to court, and tried to challenge parts of that pro-life legislation. And so they filed one lawsuit that challenged those the protocol on the abortion-inducing drugs and the admitting privileges section that raised abortionists to a higher standard. And they lost that lawsuit. We won at the Fifth Circuit level. And then the abortion industry, not Planned Parenthood, another chain of abortion clinics we have here in Texas, challenged the House Bill 2, the pro-life law, again, a second time, and picked on the ambulatory surgical center requirements, those rules that the abortion clinic itself has to follow. They took that to a district court. We went all the way up to the Fifth Circuit. We won at the Fifth Circuit level. But now they've actually taken this lawsuit about House Bill 2 up to the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court. And so they did that in June, and Supreme Court was about to go into a break, and so we didn't get a decision back from the Supreme Court. And actually, Andrew, we're going to hear back from the Supreme Court on Friday or Monday. So within a week, we'll know whether the Supreme Court is going to hear this House Bill 2 lawsuit or not. And it will be very significant on abortion jurisprudence for the Supreme Court to take up this pro-life challenge.
Absolutely. And we certainly appreciate the work that y'all are doing and obviously trying to combat that. We're going to come back with John Sego in just a second.
There's got to be more than going back and forth.
And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Glad to be with you. Right now we're joined by John Sego, who's the Legislative Director of Texas Right to Life. And we've been talking about, of course, House Bill 2. We've been talking about Planned Parenthood. Is there more with the work that y'all are doing in terms of if, and I know you said they're either going to be this Friday or Monday, we'll know if the Supreme Court's going to be taking up the issue of HB 2 and, I guess, focusing on the ambulatory services. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is an important case for all the states that have pro-life movements in them, like you guys working in Tennessee, because this what the Supreme Court's going to be looking at if they decide to take this case up is at what extent can a state pass pro-life legislation? How far can they go in raising medical standards on the abortion industry? And that's one thing that's been kind of vague, since we see the Planned Parenthood versus Casey lawsuit with this term undue burden. And so a lot of states are wondering, how far is too far in the eyes of the Supreme Court. And so this will help kind of set out a roadmap for other pro-life efforts in other states to see how they can protect pregnant women and preborn life in their states. So it's definitely important for us in Texas, but also for other states as well. So we'll find out whether they take that case up within a week's time, whether Friday or Monday, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and I think what we have to do is, as pro-lifers, is certainly pray. We need to be praying for what's going on around this country and praying for political leaders. And I think that's why we need to be engaged in the conversation. We need to be, first off, we need to educate ourselves so we know what's going on around us. We also need to know who to vote for, where they stand on the issues. You know, I think it's important as we're entering in a presidential, you know, we're right in the middle of a presidential campaign. You know, we see a number of folks, you know, Ted Cruz, Rubio, Dr. Carson, Carly Fiorina. I mean, so many people are openly talking about their pro-life stance and doing it in a bold manner and using language that we haven't heard really from a pro-life candidate in a long time. And I think it's important that we are engaged in that conversation as well, not with bitter and hate, but saying, you know, I'm not gonna hold back. I'm not gonna whisper anymore. I'm gonna stand for life at every stage, because we know that a society that devalues life at its earliest stage via abortion, and a society that devalues life at its latest stage via doctor-assisted suicide, is ultimately a society that devalues life. And we need to be standing strong for life because it matters. And not only that of the preborn, but that of the mom and the families that are affected every single day by organizations that are preying on them. And in such a vulnerable state, they are getting them at that very difficult time and making them think they can't handle that. It goes back to, as we talk about women's right issues, and you know, so many people that argue against us or don't like where we stand on issues will say they're for women's rights, but they don't believe that these women can achieve their dreams while also being a mom. And it just blows my mind that no one calls them out on that, because what I'm saying is, no, you can have your dreams and your baby. You can do both of those. And we would celebrate that, and we're going to walk alongside of you in that, alongside with you, because we care deeply. We have a former patient of ours that found herself pregnant while she was in undergrad, had dreams of becoming an attorney, and all that kind of came to a screeching halt when she found herself pregnant. She came to Hope. She, you know, had our services, went through parenting class, chose life, and is now an assistant district attorney because she said, I want my baby, but I'm going to achieve my dreams as well. And we celebrate that. Did it take her longer? Was it a difficult path? Sure. But it's one now where she looks back and she has this gorgeous 6-year-old boy, and she's doing well with her child. One thing I want to talk about now is some legislation that you're looking to bring forth in next session with the dismemberment abortion ban. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's kind of two areas of law that I'd recommend other states looking at that were working on in Texas, and alluded to the first one earlier. There still is some work that we have to do on the defunding issue. It's a difficult topic, but we're looking for some permanent solutions to make sure that Planned Parenthood cannot creep back into our state government. So that's something that states will always have to be prudent about, is protecting our taxpayer dollars. I don't expect D.C. to get their act in order anytime soon, so it's kind of up to the state to take
Absolutely.
The next step of that fight on defunding. But the one that you mentioned is our top priority, and I think pro-lifers really need to look into this issue. It's, you know, several states have passed what's called the dismemberment abortion ban, and this is a piece of legislation that would prohibit a specific type of abortion, very similar to the partial birth abortion ban that was so successful in the 2007, that was upheld by the Supreme Court. And, you know, in light of these horrific videos, undercover videos that we've been seeing as a country, that we've been struggling with and really having to face some horrific realities about elective abortion, this kind of continues that conversation to talk about how terrible, how inhumane an elective abortion is. And so what this would do is this would prohibit the horrible procedure that actually takes the life of a child by ripping the limbs apart from that unborn child. That's the method that actually takes the child's life. And whenever our society is faced with that kind of ugliness, that kind of injustice, they respond, like we've seen our culture responds to these ugly videos that kind of shows the dark side of the abortion industry. And that's what this dismemberment abortion ban does, is that it prohibits that horrific and inhumane act of that abortion procedure. So that's what we're going to be looking at, is this is one, you know, terrible procedure that as a humane society we should be able to prohibit. We should be able to protect our preborn neighbors from this torturous act of dismemberment abortion.
Now, in Texas, I know that Governor Perry was you know, staunchly pro-life. Is Governor Abbott in the same sense? Is he more so pro-life? Is he, you know, where is he at?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have we do have a new governor, Governor Abbott. He was governor during our last legislative session, and he is a strong, outspoken proponent of pro-life legislation. He is leading the way on looking at how far we can do on the defunding issue, how much taxpayer dollars we can keep from going to Planned Parenthood, and he's leading the way on the Medicaid side of that equation. The legislature is kind of tied, their hands are tied on passing laws about Medicaid, but he's looking, and his office is looking at ways that Planned Parenthood has violated their Medicaid contract and discontinuing that contract there. So he's absolutely a pro-life partner with us here in Texas. And we, you know, will continue to work with him and our Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick here as we kind of move forward this dismemberment ban and look for opportunities to keep taxpayer dollars away from the abortion industry.
Now, what type of work, if any, do y'all do with local pregnancy centers down there? I mean, I'm familiar with a few there in Texas with The Source in Houston and some other folks. What are y'all doing in kind of partnership? Do y'all have a good relationship with other pro-life arms of the movement?
Yeah, absolutely. So I appreciate what you said earlier. It is different kind of sides, different fronts of the pro-life battle, and we see our pregnancy centers as absolutely essential for that. We have a partnership in a program that we passed in our legislature that some states have already passed and some states are looking into it, is where we actually have pregnancy centers that can be reimbursed for the social services, from social services that they provide to women, and it's called the Alternatives to Abortion Program. So we're giving, we're spending about $500 million a biennium on the health services for women, and we're now investing in some social services as well for these women who are facing an unexpected pregnancy. And the Alternatives to Abortion Program is a network of adoption agencies, pregnancy centers, maternity homes, and other social service agencies that provide counseling, that provide materials assistance and referrals to them, and can actually get reimbursed for that time that they do. And it's been extremely helpful for this large network of pregnancy centers and adoption agencies in Texas. And so that's one way that we've helped them out, but we also have to fend off any attacks. Our legislature, like I said, we have a loud pro-choice Democratic Party here in Texas, and they file legislation, they'll file amendments all the time trying to attack either the First Amendment rights of our pregnancy centers or putting burdens, health standard burdens on pregnancy centers when they're actually, the majority of them are doing social services. So we're constantly there to protect them, make sure that they're not being shut down because they're doing essential work for the pro-life movement here in Texas.
What do you see in terms of church support, folks that are coming alongside of Texas Right to Life and the life movement as a whole? What do you see an outpouring of support? I know you're there in Austin, and Austin's a little bit kind of an enigma, I think, in Texas, but and a little bit different. But what do you see in terms of folks that are boldly saying, I'm pro-life, and I don't really care who knows that about me?
Right. Well, you're right on. I do live in Austin, which our Governor Perry called the blueberry and the tomato soup. You know, it's the one
point,
blue
yeah.
spot in the middle of a big red state. But yeah, absolutely. So even in Austin, though, and across the state, we're seeing faith leaders stand up for life. And with these videos, there was such an outcry. There was such a conversation that we were very encouraged and continue to be encouraged by even pastors who have been quietly pro-life kind of see, no, this is an important issue that I need to address, that our congregation needs to talk about. And even though it's not an easy conversation for some denominations, this is one that we've been really encouraged that, yeah, we do have an outpouring of support, and not just from the Catholic community. You know, I'm personally Protestant, and I see that the Catholics, the Catholic Church has been leading in this issue when Protestants were, you know, a little slow to stand up for preborn children and pregnant women. And thankfully, we're kind of seeing that both sides, the Protestant churches as well as the Catholic community still in Texas standing up for this life, are joining together to respond appropriately to the horrific nature of these videos, to tell legislators that they're not going to put up with their compromising laws and put up with their weak needs when it comes to passing strong legislation. So we've been really encouraged by that, and so we've had more invitations to do educational events, come into a congregation and talk about these hard topics, like these undercover videos. Nobody wants to talk about them. Nobody wants to see them. But it's a conversation that needs to happen in our churches. So we're absolutely proud to partner with our Texas churches in that.
Absolutely, and we're glad that you are. We're going to talk more and continue this conversation in just a sec.
I am guilty, ashamed of what I've done, what I've become. These hands all dirty, I dare not lift them up to the Holy One. You plead my cause, you.
This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Love that song. We are certainly glad that you're listening today. We're joined by John Sego, Legislative Director, Texas Right to Life. And before we get back into conversation, I just wanted to note something today just about Hope Resource Center. In the month of October, our staff performed 39 ultrasounds. 29 of those patients prior to an ultrasound were uncertain of the choice they would make, and many were contemplating and seriously leaning toward abortion. And we're happy to say that post-ultrasound, 36 of the 39 intend to carry and chose life. Because we know that seeing an image of an unborn life truly changes hearts and minds. So that's why we do what we do here in Knoxville. That's why we do what we do at Hope Resource Center. But that's why John and his crew do what they do in Texas. So, John, what I want to do now is kind of talk about, you know, so many times people look at me and they go, okay, we have a young male involved in the pro-life movement. What made you get involved in the pro-life movement? Are you seeing more men, young men, men of any kind, standing for life? Because ultimately, I think that is what's going to be the tipping point, is when men start getting engaged, doing what we've been told to do, what we've been designed to do. Because we see that in Genesis 3, when Adam was twiddling his thumbs while his wife was being attacked, he did nothing. And so what we see now in a lot of society is men standing doing nothing. And when we really need to be engaged, and we could really turn this, turn things around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's just young men. I do see, you know, the next generation generally. At Texas Right to Life, we have a college scholarship program where we give college students a scholarship to start or lead in their pro-life groups, pro-life student group on their campus. And we have more than 70 college students now in our scholarship program that are leading, that are starting, that are activating these pro-life student groups across our state. And we've been able to reach out to all of these college campuses, and we're seeing, like you mentioned, an outpouring of this next generation of pro-life leaders. And so while, you know, culturally there might be this message of, if you're a male, you can't talk about this issue, we're seeing that the next generation sees it in better terms. They see it as a justice issue, and that really resonates on a college campus. On college campus, there will be, you know, there will be demonstrations and petitions about animal rights, about environmental justice, all of these causes, and the pro-life movement has found that, you know, the most important cause that we need to educate our college students about and our high school students about is actually this injustice of elective abortion. And we see a great response from these college campuses and the men, the young men and the young women that are leading those groups. So I would definitely be encourage anyone who's looking at the next generation, encourage them to look at the numbers of these very articulate, very passionate leaders that are coming up through the ranks of these ministries, of these student groups, and know that the pro-life movement has a bright future ahead of it.
Right, and it's such a pleasure to see young people and really all kinds of people starting to stand. And I think the videos that have been released in the last few months has brought some people from the shadows now to the forefront and saying, we've had people reach out to us to Hope and saying, you know, I can't sit by any longer. I need to get engaged and get involved, and we're certainly thankful for that. You know, John, we have about 3, maybe 4 minutes left. What would be something that folks in Tennessee can do, that folks that are listening to this, what can they do to help Texas Right to Life, to help National Right to Life, to stand for life? What can they do to be engaged, and especially with the Supreme Court possibly taking up HB2, you know, we'll learn here in the next few days. What would you encourage folks? What would kind of be your challenge to folks that are hearing this today?
Well, we have an extremely unique opportunity with these videos that have come out. And I know you've talked about that a lot, Andrew, but it is something that we need to keep in the cultural conversation, that these videos have a unique opportunity to visually show how horrible elective abortion is. And I know, you know, the media is trying to move on to a bigger story. Even some conservatives are getting a little sick of this story and trying to move on to what's more interesting. But it is our duty to continue to show the truth about elective abortion, the central injustice of it. So I would encourage all pro-lifers not to lose heart. You know, sometimes we see what's going on in D.C., and we get frustrated. Why isn't change happening faster? You know, it's been 40 years from Roe, and it's been several months with these horrific videos, and we haven't seen any huge policy changes. But I would encourage you to continue to have these conversations. There are minds, hearts and minds are being changed on this topic, and it's extremely important time to have that conversation, especially coming up with this presidential nominee on our side. So I'll encourage you, whoever the Republican nominee is, make sure that they're pro-life and then get behind them. That's going to be a huge next step for the pro-life movement, that this fight's going to be out in the Supreme Court. And so that presidential nomination is huge for the pro-life movement. So don't lose heart. Let's continue to talk about this and push forward to getting a pro-life president.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. Thanks for joining us. We're going to have to do this again very soon. That's John Sego, Legislative Director, Texas Right to Life. And this is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. We'll be back next week.